Feakins, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Feakins?
Yes, I was born in Dorset on January 4th, 1916.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was a family butcher. They had a very large family butchers all over London. And I believe I'm told that even in one place they had 32 assistants. But apart from that, I know very little about my father, because my mother and father parted when I was 6 years of age.
What about your mother?
Mother was very charming, very beautiful. She came from a very long line of Royal Navy, my great-grandfather being Admiral Sir Charles Farrell Hillier, great-uncle, they were all admirals.
And can you tell us a bit about your childhood?
Well, as I said, that when your mother and father part at the age of six, there isn't a lot that you can really remember. We moved around quite a bit. My mother started taking in guests during the summer, as we actually lived in Bournemouth, which of course is a beautiful resort. And I was packed off to school.
Which school?
Sherburn. And then the money ran out and I was taken out of the school.
How long were you there for?
Just over a year.
Did you enjoy it there?
Yes, I did. It was quite fun. Usual hilarious schoolboy pranks, of course. But we wore boaters, the same as most schools of that day. Yes, I did enjoy it.
And after the money ran out, what then? Which school?
I'd finished schooling then, because at that time the schools finished education at 14. So I did my term at Sherburn and then finished.
And that'd be about 1930 then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what were you to do? What job?
Oh, I did all sorts of things. I first apprenticed myself electrical engineering. Didn't like that very much.
Why not?
I seem to be doing all the odd jobs, and I'm a man that likes to have hands on, or even as a young lad, I like to have my hands on and do things. Being told to move here, move there, make the tea, go to the other end of Bournemouth and collect this, that and the other, was not my idea of a good time.
So what next?
Then I moved on to grocery and provisions, and a very large firm in Bournemouth, and they apprenticed me to the provision side, and I left that.
Didn't you like that? Why didn't you? You didn't like that either?
No, I didn't like that. No. Just wasn't my métier. And I went into antiques and objet d'art with a firm called Janine, a very old-fashioned antique family. And that I did enjoy. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then I'm afraid, like a lot of youngsters of my ilk, we didn't do a lot of work. We were known as the, I suppose what you would call today, yuppies. We were the socialites. Found most mornings at one of the large department stores having coffee. Not a lot of money. We used to go to the hotel, provided the most bits and pieces in the lounge bar, have a half a pint of beer for tuppence and eat all their bits and pieces for lunch. Then I found a job as a labourer for 1 shilling and tuppence an hour with Sir Henry Parkinson, building Blandford Camp, which is now the Royal Corps Signals headquarters. That was great fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I remember the foreman when I arrived. He said, "Labourer, you've never done a hard day's work in your life. Show me your hands." And that was an absolute dead giveaway. So he said, "I've got the very job for you. They're all fiddlers on my lot." He said, "They're fiddling in their timesheets like nobody's business. You go and sit in that hut, and I want you to check their timesheets every day." You can imagine I became the most popular man on the whole camp. But we got on very well. We used to start at 6:30 in the morning until 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And in the evening I used to don white tie and tails because I took a job as a hostess of the Haven Hotel at Sandbanks. Every weekend I'd put, come off the site, grubby, filthy. Lovely Rolls Royce used to pick me up and take me over to the Sandbanks Hotel, the Haven Hotel, right by the quay, and look after the elderly guests, what have you. I had a very great time. And that's how I really enjoyed myself prior to the war.
So you were doing that right up to 1939?
Right up to, in fact, the last three times at the hotel, we'd been training and I'd throw my break because it was winter.
Right, I've taken you a little ahead there. I'll take, if we step back now to what sort of hobbies and interests you had, and then we'll come on to the TA. I mean, were you interested in sport or boys' societies, you know, scouting or anything?
Scouting. I was a scouter and then became a scoutmaster. There's still my heckle up there.
What sort of activities did you do with your group of the scouts?
Oh, trekking. Because I really love the country, I tried to teach the youngsters, when I say about the birds and the bees, I really mean the birds and the bees, and the grasses, the flowers, and give them their proper names, which I think every youngster should know. And sport, I played cricket. Played football 2 or 3 times. I found I always managed to get the biggest bashing, so I cut that out and stuck to cricket. Then, of course, at that time I had already joined the Territorial Army.
Now, let's come to the Territorial Army then. How did you come to join the Territorial Army? What made you decide?
Well, when I was at school at Sherborne, the parent regiment, of course, was the Dorset Regiment. Every OTC has a parent regiment.
Had you been in the OTC?
Yes.
What sort of activities did you do with them then?
Oh, plenty of drill, plenty of being shouted at by the seniors, and directly anybody got a stripe on their arm, of course, they thought they were God in the OTC. It's worse than in the army. But
any weapons drill at all?
Yes, we had rifles, and we did rifle drill, tactics.
What sort of tactics?
Field tactics, camouflage, all that sort of thing.
Were you training for your Cert A, or did you take your Cert A?
No, I didn't, no.
Did you enjoy it?
I would have been a dunce had I taken it.
Did you enjoy the OTC?
Very, very much. And that is, of course, what lured me towards the Territorial Army.
So how did you come to join them then?
It was just a progressive thought, progression of thing, that I enjoyed the army, always had, ever since a very small child. Marching soldiers in uniform always drew me. And I joined what was the 94th Hants and Dorset Royal Artillery Regiment, which was the produced out of the Queen's Own Dorset Yeomanry.
How did you go about joining? Do you remember where you went and what happened?
A pal of mine and myself, we went to the Lansdowne Drill Hall in Bournemouth. They had two or three open nights, and we were bitten by the bug.
What would happen on an open night, do you remember?
Well, the trained soldiers would form you up and give you a number of orders, and they would check you on your ability to obey orders. I suppose that was really what it was all about.
Was there an interview before you joined?
Oh yes, there was an interview. And strangely enough, they said, "And I suppose you went to public school by your voice?" And I said, "I beg your pardon, because I didn't think I spoke any different to anybody else. I suppose when I was young, it did sound a bit icky." And I said, "Yes." He said, "Were you able to see?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Right, the first thing you do after this interview, you go out there, pick up a stripe from the stores, and you sew it on." Our sergeant major was chalky white. And I said, "Why is that so, Major?" He said, "You are now a local acting unpaid lance bombardier." And I thought, "My God, that sounds good." So I put a stripe up and found that that was the lowest form of life, acting unpaid local lance bombardier.
Why had they done that?
Because I was then put in charge of all the other youngsters that had just joined and had absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of how to fall in or anything like that. I suppose I was just a half a jump ahead.
Did you think of joining as an officer, or was that just not possible or considered?
I was asked if I would, and I said no.
Why not?
I suppose even right through my life I've been a very, very great person to come right in. And I like to be with people I like and people I know. And I didn't think I could do it. That's my honest and candid opinion. Because that was the first time. I was asked a number of times after that.
So you were based at the Lansdowne Drill Hall, Bournemouth. Right. And what kit did they issue you? Oh, well, better get the date. What was the date you joined? Do you know? Roughly, if not.
Anyway, just before the war.
And
tunics, breeches, putties, and spurs.
And how did your training progress? You were in half a jump ahead of this group. What were the first things that you'd go to the drill hall, and what would they teach you first as a group?
Well, just forming up all the new recruits and drilling them, with a sergeant actually in charge watching every movement I made, I suppose, to make sure that I knew what I was doing and gave the orders clearly. Then in May 39 we went to Oakhampton, which is a firing camp for the Royal Artillery.
Now, had you done any gun drill at all before you went there?
Oh, yes. Well, I had.
What about that then? What gun were you using?
At that time was a We'd moved to 18 pounders at that time, fixed ammunition.
Do you remember the gun drill as it was?
As it was then, yes. It was good fun. We had a dial sight, which of course went out of existence, I believe, at the beginning of the war. It was 170 degrees left and 170 degrees right, which if you got mixed up, the shots went all over the bloody place. And if the gun position officer said 100 degrees left, you might put your arm, left arm up to make sure. Very, very good.
That was the layers job then?
That was the layers job.
What about the rest of the team? What were they doing?
Loading, ammunition, and the sergeant stood right back up the tail, shouting the orders.
Now you joined the 94th Regiment, but did you have a battery and troop you were in?
Yes, I belonged to 2 and 8 Battery. And being Dorset Regiment, of course, we had another battery in Dorchester. They were the 224 Battery, made up from people all the way around. Yeovil, Sherburn, you name it.
And what about troop? Did you have a troop number or letter?
Yes, I was in Bear Troop.
B Troop?
Yes. I believe it's got some other name now.
Did you have any sort of weekend camps or other training before you went to the firing camp at Okehampton?
No, just training at the drill hall, just gun training, which I did very little.
What were you doing then?
I was learning the Morse code, etc.
So you were
a signal guard.
How did you set about learning Morse code?
It was done with an old, very old-fashioned piece of machinery called a Don R9, I think it was, or Don 9, which had a buzzer and lines run out everywhere. And you just learn, obviously, the alphabet in Morse code, the old diddy-da-di, I can still remember some of it. And you passed out at 12 words a minute. Whereas the Navy passes out at 21, so that'll give you an idea of how slow it was.
Any other signal or training you got?
Flags. The old-fashioned flag.
Was that semaphore or Morse flags?
Semaphore. And
did you see any point to that at the time?
There didn't seem to be any point to it at all, but nevertheless I believe that it was a case of learning it because of the discipline of learning.
Did you learn how to lay telephone lines?
Yes, we learned how to do that. And we learned how to reel it out of a truck. Which, if you were unlucky, you got your foot caught in it. And the next thing, you were in a hedge. But, became very proficient in that.
How did the apparatus work?
Well, on the back, on the tailboard of the Morris 8 1500 weight, I think it was. Morris 1500 weight. There was a static piece on the board which you lead a big wheel into, full of on our cable, and you reeled it out whilst men on the side of the vehicle had a long pole with a little hook that ran it through, and he was doing flicking it over hedges. A very precarious job. We didn't do it at any fast speed, obviously.
About what speed?
8, 10 miles an hour. So you happen to snap a cable, of course, and bang, bang, you pulled the driver up very quickly, went back, joined the wire up, and off we went again. And I stayed being a signaller then for many, many, many months.
So what did you do at Okehampton then? What was the setup at Okehampton?
Mostly watching the train gunners firing, of course. I don't know if there's an incident that might cause a bit of merriment. It did my troop captain. We were marching all these young recruits. I had 60 of them. Bearing in mind I was an acting unpaid lance bombardier. I had 60. We're marching towards the hill where they were firing, and all of a sudden I looked and I perceived a brook in front of us, quite wide, and going across this brook was a small bridge about two planks wide, and in those days we marched in fours. I was in a hell of a state of how I was going to get fours into twos. And I think they were about three steps from getting on to this bridge, with half of them headed for the water. And I suddenly remembered, form half sections, rear mark time. And I just managed it. And we went on up the hill. And I always remember the troop captain coming across and saying to me, "Oh dear Feekins, you nearly did it, didn't you?" I said, "I beg your pardon, sir." And it was only then I realised he'd been watching me through his field glasses all the way to see how I was operating. And he said, "You just remembered the order for form half sections." "Yes, sir, I'm very sorry." But a whole hoot of laughter went up around everyone then. One of those funny things.
What, you were obviously looking after these recruits at the camp. Were you doing any practical signal laying at the camp out to the OPs and things like that?
No, it was, at that time, it was really just making sure we understood all the orders that were being given by the seniors, watching them intently, being drilled by the seniors, by all the trained soldiers. And it was when we came back from camp that when we really started doing things.
How did you get on with your fellow recruits?
Very well. Very well.
Did you have any particular pals?
Yes. Chap by the name of Tarsi, of course he became Farsi. My name being Feekins, and short was Feeky, and it soon became Sneaky Feeky. One of those things that happens in the army. But we were a very, very happy bunch, very happy.
What about the NCOs? What were they like?
Very good, no different to us. And of course, being territorial, they only tried to boss you about when they were in uniform. Other than that, you were just hail fellow well met.
And the officers?
Very, very good. I got on very well with all of them. And the subject of my commission kept cropping up. I kept tossing it aside. I had no use for it.
And you say when you got back that the pace of training increased,
and then you were actually formed in with the trained soldiers, absorbed into the troops, and got blasted to hell, of course, if we did anything wrong, because we were then regarded as proper soldiers and not recruits. And that was in May. We did some weekend training.
Where would you go?
We went out in Bournemouth although it's a seaside town, it out on the outskirts, a beautiful countryside, and that's where we would all go. St. Catherine's Hills, Hengistbury Head.
And what were you signal as practicing?
We were still really getting to hand with the Morse code, etc., because and radio operating.
I was going to ask about that, because you used the D9 telephone equipment. What about radios, wireless?
Well, we had, I think it was a number 11 set. It is difficult now to remember, and 18. Number 11 you carried on your back as and moved around. And the 18 was an inter-battery, inter-regimental radio.
And what were they teaching you on the radio?
How to not swear on the radio and send no personal messages, not to listen to the BBC, and how to really keep the correct procedure.
It was voice, you mainly used it for voice transmission then, rather than Morse transmission.
That's right.
And what was the proper procedure?
You would admittedly start with receiving strength sensors so that you knew whether to turn it up or turn it down. You'd say receiving strength 9. Then you would carry on the conversation. Then you'd have to switch over to receive so that you could hear what he was saying. And so it went backwards and forwards.
Now, during this period of heightened training, were you aware of the approach of war? I mean, were you aware of what was going on in Germany, of Hitler, of Nazism? I mean, was that something that you understood at the time?
Yes. In fact, you know, by that time, June, July, it was becoming quite imminent. And everybody was polishing their boots and polishing their spurs and goodness knows what. And I think it was about August they started issuing us with a ghastly uniform to become known as a battle dress.
But why didn't you like it?
Well, it wasn't smart. I mean, the British soldier in his tunic, brass buttons, breeches, putties and spurs was, and a peaked cap. We looked well. This battle dress looked like a plumber on leave.
Was it in any way more practical or comfortable?
Oh yes, I have to admit that it was a lot more practical and more comfortable. I mean, putties, you had to have 9.5 turns on your putties, and every sergeant or sergeant major had a stick with a little notch, and if he was walking along inspecting you, you would never know whether he was going to pick on you or the next man to measure 9.5 turns of your putty. The same trick they used to get up to with our spurs, because sixpences jingled much nicer than steel. So we used to take the rod out of our spurs and put sixpences in. That was only for walking out. You wouldn't dare go on parade. And if you forgot and went on parade with the spurs with the sixpences in, you could be in a lot of